Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let's get to our weekly update on all things Florida politics now. And joining me, I have Peter Schorsch, the publisher of Florida Politics. You can find him on Twitter at Peter Schorsch FL. And you can find all of his work, of course, at FloridaPolitics.com. Peter, great to talk to you again this week. And I want to start with Governor DeSantis doing away with these FSA standardized tests for students here in Florida. This seems like a big win for the governor. It's getting bipartisan praise. What are your thoughts on that move?
Yeah, this is a big win for the governor, squashing out the last remnants of Common Core. If there's a loser in it, it's probably Jeb Bush. The architect of the A-plus education plan that included all of the FSA testing. I saw somebody say this may be a way for the governor to get back in the good graces of the parents. He's upset with the mask mandate opposition, and so it's kind of now a wash. His standing with a lot of Florida parents who have children in schools. I got to tell you, this was the first year that we were starting to get our daughter ready for that. And it does it does bring on a little bit of apprehension. You're just like, it's just this big matzo ball on the calendar just sitting out there. And so I can't imagine having multiple kids in it. I can't imagine an entire, school system or a principal of a school, where it is just make or break, all or nothing on these tests. And so I think that there is a lot of common sense and, hey, we should monitor it moving along. I guess if there's any, if there's a downside to it, it's like we have moved Florida schools into a good direction. And so I hate to sit, it's like the old, don't fix what's not broken. I don't want to say that the schools are not broken, because in some places they really are. But we have made a lot of progress over the last 15, 20 years, and I hope we don't see that rolled back.
This definitely feels like a pre-pandemic DeSantis move. One of those moves where he takes action on something that, again, is a bipartisan initiative, and he gets support for something from corners where maybe you wouldn't expect a Republican governor to get support.
Yeah, if you've got the teachers unions and Richard Corcoran, and the editorial board all agreeing with your decision, you're probably in the right spot. And so, I think this is, I don't want to be cynical and say that it is in response to the uproar with the parents over the mask mandate opposition. I think it was long time planning. I think it's something also, Corcoran has really wanted to see happen here. And it's almost nice in a way to have debates about things that are not related to the virus. Can we have a policy debate that isn't about the pandemic or at the national level, Donald Trump or something like that? Like, can we just be normal, and agree and disagree over political issues? That was actually kind of attractive yesterday.
We've seen the governor really angle himself much more to the base over the course of the past year plus, whereas early in his administration, he was taking a more bipartisan approach to so many different issues. Could this be an indication that he's going to start that pivot a little bit more back to the center for the 2022 midterms, or is that reading a little bit too much into it?
I think that's reading a little bit too much into it, because let's not forget that ending Common Core was a Republican base issue long before Donald Trump, long before Ron DeSantis. I mean, it was one of the issues that Rick Scott was running into trouble. If I remember correctly, he had to dispatch his chief of staff or his deputy chief of staff in charge of education policy at that time, Kim McDougald, to kind of settle down some parents that were protesting, I think in Sarasota, but somewhere in Southwest Florida. There were some, more and more angst over Common Core still being around. And so And there's nothing wrong with playing to your base. That's who elected him, right? That base, that Republican base is.
Yeah,
we want that. We want those. You know, we want Democrats to be supportive of teachers' unions, and we want Republicans to be opposed to Common Core. That's fine. And so maybe it's a play back to the traditional Republican, moderate suburban. You know, again, parents with young kids. I mean, that's the bread and butter of what Ron DeSantis wants to run on, and it's probably someplace that he can draw a strong contrast on both Nikki Fried and Charlie Crist, who, you know, who don't have children of their own, who aren't raising a young family. It is an area, you know, that I think he can present a strong contrast in 2022.
I'm joined by the publisher of FloridaPolitics.com, Peter Schorsch, for our weekly Florida Politics update. Let's talk about the governor threatening to issue millions of dollars in fines for local vaccine mandates. This is another area in this pandemic where many local governments just are not on the same page as Governor DeSantis.
You know, I read the pretty hard editorial in the Washington Post, called it, you know, the most cynical response of DeSantis's entire response, you know, that he's going to fine, you know, the city of Miami Beach, the sanitation worker, for them, you know, requiring the sanitation worker to get vaccinated, et cetera. You know, I just think that you know, his war on cities and counties has always been a problem, but this is just bizarre at this point. It's a further example of the usurpation of, you know, local governments. The idea that local government is best is a Republican hallmark.
Yeah.
And, you know, but then he doubled down with it. And it was just one of these moments that, you know, is going to be a TV commercial at some point. And it's going to be, you know, when the city of Gainesville workers talking about RNA and has some really misleading statements there. And DeSantis is looking at him. He sees what he says. And then the next day he says he doesn't remember what the guy says. It was like a bad Curb Your Enthusiasm video. I'm waiting for Nikki Fried to put out a little 30-second clip on that. It was one of the worst moments, I think, of the governor's response. It also plays into, and this is where it gets me fired up, you know, he says that he is pro-vaccines, et cetera. You cannot be pro-vaccines and condone a message like what was delivered this week in Gainesville. So, like, any of the talk about how he's, you know, talked about vaccines at 50 different press conferences, et cetera. Well, he allows this to happen,
yeah,
too. So he sends mixed signals to his base and to the people that who are unvaccinated.
Look, the only way you end up on stage with somebody like that who's spewing just complete nonsense about these COVID-19 vaccines, just fake news about them, is if you are okay with or are willing to accept those who are in that anti-vax realm, even if it's only a wink and a nod. That's how you end up in a situation like that. And what it does is it undermines faith in the safe and effective vaccines that really are Florida's way out from more surges in hospitalizations and more deaths.
I think there was a study out this week talking about what if other states had been vaccinated at the same level as Vermont, which I think has the same vaccination rate. And that's comparing apples and bowling balls, I get it. But the thousands of people in Florida who would be alive today,
yeah,
if we were vaccinated just at that same level. I understand we're doing, let's give credit, we're doing fairly well. I think we're ahead of Texas. I think we're, is it like 19th, 18th, maybe in the country in vaccination rate? We're doing better than the average. We're doing better than most of the other big states, especially Illinois, especially, again, Texas. But, I mean, When you apply out vaccination rates, you got to remember that there's a human cost to these numbers. So if we could get from 67% to 75%, we're talking about thousands,
yeah,
of Floridians' lives at this point. So this isn't just a abstract number at this point. And this is another thing that really drives me crazy about the pandemic. We're kind of out of the woods on Delta right now. Like, we're not at the peak, but the downward slope is still as treacherous as the upward slope. And so, yes, you're not at 20,000 new cases every day. You're still at 11,000, 12,000 cases every day. A year ago, that would have set off alarm bells. You know, 250, 300 people dying every day would have set off alarm bells. We have become We've just, you know, we gloss over these numbers, and it's disturbing. We are on our way to 50,000 dead, and we're going to turn the corner, and we're going to still continue to march upwards on that, and we have to pray that something bad doesn't happen in December, January when it gets cold.
We are seeing the worst stretch of COVID-19 deaths in the state of Florida up to this point in the pandemic, which is incredible because we have something that can literally save lives at this point.
It is, you know, and you and I talked offline, you know, I'm in New York City right now. It's crazy that, you know, that we were talking, you know, at the beginning of the summer, it was going to be, you know, hot vax girl summer, and it was going to be this great euphoric period because we had the vaccines, et cetera. I cannot believe we are still staring at 300 300 people dead a day statistics out of the Department of Health. It is just, it's sobering, it's sad, it's tragic.
And just going back to this idea of fining cities and counties for each employee that's required to get vaccinated, it just seems like time and time again, the governor has come down harder on areas of the state and officials within the state who are taking the measures to help, again, get us on the other side of this pandemic. And when it comes to the punishments for those who made it so much harder, whether they defied mask mandates or did this or that, they got pardons, they got passes. And that messaging, I think, has been a real problem, not to mention the fact that these same cities and counties that could potentially get fined now, we'll see if how this actually plays out. But these are the same local officials, same cities and counties that at the height of the pandemic last year, they were making the tough decisions and taking the difficult steps to mitigate the spread of the virus. And that's part of what Governor DeSantis is able to point to in saying that Florida's done well throughout this pandemic.
So I want to, I haven't thought this fully out. And so go easy on me, but there's something also about the demographics of the city workers who are not vaccinated. And it's a lot of the police force. It's a lot of the firefighters. It's a lot of, and this is just so generalization, but I see a lot of like the 50-year-old white dudes behind him who don't want to be vaccinated. It also like overlaps to me the idea that we're still having a lot of trouble with healthcare workers, a certain segment of healthcare workers. And who is that? Well, it's usually about like 45 to 60-year-old white women who are nurses who are not at the highest level of the nursing field. And it is, and so it is a, he's saying it's city workers, he's saying it's healthcare workers. That's not what's going on here. It is the white Republican middle-aged base that he is trying to exempt here and in a way backfill. And again, I haven't put the whole grand unifying theory together. I'm sure there are going to be some people that push back on that. But, you know, at all these press conferences that he has on with these folks, it looks like a MAGA rally. Like it has the same over. There's a huge Venn diagram here where the two circles overlapping and there's a lot in the middle that is, you know, from both circles. And I think that that's part of it also. I know that that's cynical. I know that that's political, but I really believe that that is what is at play here.
I'm joined by the publisher of Florida Politics, Peter Schorsch, who you can find online at floridapolitics.com. One big question that's coming up here in the state of Florida, will Governor DeSantis and Republicans within the state push for a Texas-style abortion law? Where do you think that's going to head?
Well, I think that there is some interesting news from Kathleen Pasadomo, who is in line to be the Senate president after Wilton Simpson. She has said she does not want to copy and paste of the Texas law. You know, Governor DeSantis, to his credit, has been a little circumspect about it. The one big difference between Texas and Florida is the privacy protections enshrined in our Constitution. You know, I think a lot of people have a problem, even Republicans, with the very bizarre bounty-esque aspect of the Texas law. I think you will see some kabuki theater out of Tallahassee, The first 55 days, there will be some abortion bill talk, et cetera. I don't know at the end of the day if it actually gets across the finish line, especially when I think, and I've said this to my Republican candidate friends, you know, the one thing that could change the whole dynamic is the abortion bill. I do think that that's something that activates people. And in fact, you know, something that we first reported on Florida Politics today, a top line congressional candidate who was going against Maria Salazar in South Florida dropped out of that race and is now running against State Senator Ileana Garcia, which is in Senate District 37, which some people may recognize as the seat where there's been all the controversy about the shadow candidates and things like that. She has jumped into that race and she is citing the what has happened with the Texas abortion law maybe coming to Florida, that it is more important for her to, you know, take out a Republican senator than it is to go after a Republican congresswoman. And so it's just evidence that that's the kind of thing that could activate, you know, a little bit more than the usual. I don't think people turned out for the transgender bill. I don't think people turn out for the data privacy bill or a lot of the stuff that we debated last session. I think the Texas-style abortion bill could be one of those things that Republicans don't want to deal with in an election year.
And I don't know that it makes a lot of sense because you have a much more consequential, when it comes to the abortion issue, Supreme Court decision that's coming down next year on all of this. And I think the politically safe bet would be to wait for that to happen and then kind of go from there. One final question for you. Former President Donald Trump endorsing Ana Paulina Luna in the Republican primary for that Pinellas House seat, Congressional District 13. So with that endorsement, with Charlie Crist, the incumbent, not being in that race, with it being a midterm election, which is typically tougher on the party in power, could things be shaping up pretty nicely for Ana Paulina Luna to really compete and potentially even win that seat?
I think that, well, first of all, I think that the endorsement for her in the primary is big. There had been some talk about House Speaker Chris Sproul jumping into that race at the end of the redistricting period. A lot of Tallahassee insiders said that that was what was going on behind the scenes, even though he had said that it wasn't happening. It was one of those he doth protest too much. And so securing that was very important. That, you know, that'll probably get her through the primary. And then redistricting, we do have to see what that seat looks like. It has to gain by about 20,000-25,000 votes. The only place to go is North and Pinellas, and quite honestly, the voters of North Pinellas are more Republican than Democrat. So, you know, I'd probably put her at a 40-50% chance right now overall. So I think that she's definitely had, she may be kind of the winner of the week in Florida politics, at least in the Tampa Bay area, for getting that endorsement.
The publisher of FloridaPolitics.com, Peter Schorsch. You can follow on Twitter at Peter Schorsch FL with our weekly Florida politics update. Peter, always appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Ryan. Take care.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.